this is Randy Randall from No Age. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. Thanks a lot.
You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
You better work, cover girl, work it girl, never twirl, do your thing on the runway. Run, supermodel, work it girl, of the world, wet your lips and make yourself up. Oh, oh, yeah. It don't matter what you do, cause everything looks good on you. You better work. Cover girl, work it girl, give a twirl, do your thing on the runway. Supermodel, work it girl, of the world, wet your lips and make love.
Moonwalker,
Janet,
Titty Flame,
LaToya,
Hey Toy Toy,
Tito,
Burrito,
Reeby,
Centipede,
Jermaine,
Insane.
I have one thing to say, Sashay, Shantae, 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 Shantae. I have one thing to say.
It don't matter what you wear,
it don't matter what you wear,
checking out your savoir faire,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It don't matter what you do,
cause everything looks good on you.
Work it.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you might be one of our podcast listeners in case you're downloading this later on. But however you've decided to spend this hour with us, we are very, very glad to have you. Well, coming up in town, there's some really exciting things going on. Something called Beauties and Bras. And it may not quite be what you think that you're thinking. Depending on what you're thinking. And that's going to be on Friday night, which is January the 29th. And that's going to be at the Caprice. And it's for a really awesome, really good cause. It's going to be lingerie. And there's going to be all sorts of sexy things. But the cool thing about this is not only is it going to be an amazing show, all the proceeds are going to be going going to be donated to Shelley's Angel Society. So here to talk about that, which I'm very excited about, especially with this being National Eating Disorder Week, if I remember correctly, and I don't know if I've got that proper, I've got Shelley Jensen, and Shelley is the founder of Shelley's Angel Society and S-Team Counseling Services. She's a professional counselor and has spent the last 17 years dedicating her life to researching, learning, and loving the compulsive eater. And welcome, Shelley.
Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. So tell me a little bit about the society.
Shelley's Angels is a nonprofit organization. We raise money for those who cannot afford treatment or counseling. And we also educate the community on fostering a deeper understanding within the community about the core issues surrounding eating disorders.
I think it's really important, especially earlier today, we were chatting about the fact that so many people experience eating disorders, and in terms of society, it's one of those things where, in general, body image, sexuality, we don't accept ourselves, and that starts at a really young age. It kind of made me a little bit sad, actually, when you and I were chatting today about when you go into the schools and do the education for the youth, and you'd mentioned something just in terms of how one of the things you see all the time is the guys don't treat the girls very well. And this isn't a slam on guys, because we love you, but it is one of those things that we've got to be really aware of. And when you said that to me earlier in terms of the guys don't treat the girls very well, what exactly did you mean by that?
I mean that within the younger group that we're seeing now, I found that a lot of my clients that are in a younger age group, there's a little bit of a role confusion, I think, a lot of times for younger men.
And would you say that's because of the fact that men and women don't have defined roles in general, or what do you think causes that?
Yes, I do think that, and also from, you know, their backgrounds and their parents now that are, you know, in their 40s or 30s or 40s, and where we sort of grew up with more of a role, they've lost a little bit of that, and so I think it's a bit of a power struggle, in a sense, for boys to be wanting a little more, in more aggression, perhaps, towards younger girls.
Okay.
And, you know, and I find that quite disturbing, and it's certainly not with all of the youth or all the young men that I've met, but there are a few, and it's usually tied in to a young woman with an eating disorder as well.
Just in general, do you find that the women who have the eating disorders are attracted to that, or because of low self-esteem, or what do you think causes that?
Yeah, that can certainly be one of the factors, most definitely. And and also just running over in their minds that they're not good enough, or they want to create a different look, and so that's appealing to a lot of the younger boys, and so they sort of meet in the middle, in a way, the two of them.
Okay, and when we say younger, and I know we talked about this a little bit earlier, what exactly do you mean by that? Do you mean the 16 to 24-year-olds in terms of the stats, or are we talking even younger than that?
I would say younger than that.
Okay.
Really, 11, 12, up to about 18.
Wow.
You know, so it's really, the maturity level is higher, just in our culture in general, and their information that they're overloaded with, and the dynamics of that is really powerful. There's a lot of stimulation to that age group right now.
Okay, and what type of stimulation? I know we were chatting about other cultures earlier, and I had brought up the fact that in certain parts of Africa and certain parts of India, pornography plays all the time on television, which of course affects people when they come here in Canada, and affects people just in general, and access to pornography. Internet porn is one of the highest addictions out there right now, and how does that affect our youth and our kids? And is that a factor?
Absolutely. And I think it's giving us such a false image about women.
Okay.
And a confusing image to young boys. You know, if you're 11 or 12 and you have access to that kind of material, which is easily accessible.
I'm wondering why everybody doesn't look like Jenna Jameson.
Yes. Yeah, so, and then in turn, that puts the pressure on the young girls to engage in plastic surgeries and things like that, which is really a huge epidemic as well.
It is, and even on another note, in terms of the plastic surgery, just the labiaplasty, the amount of breast implants, etc., it's just increased since it's more accessible in terms of seeing pornography.
Yes, absolutely. I think that has a lot to do with it.
And it's sad that it is affecting our youth in that way, and in the fact that we don't see ourselves as good enough.
Absolutely, and what we're really trying to create is sort of a glass ceiling. Like it's an endlessness to try to find that type of perfectionism or perfectionist, and it becomes about perfectionism after that. And so you're really trying to attain an illusion. It's really not even reality, even, you know, in regards to pornography.
Mm-hmm.
It's not reality about how men and women are even stimulated, you know, and within the relationships and building intimacy as well. It's just a real illusion. It's a false front. It's confusing.
Well, it's very confusing. And again, it comes right back to what you said at the beginning, which was the fact that there aren't defined roles for men and women anymore. And that's perhaps something that we need to honor and look at, that men have their roles, women have theirs, and what exactly is that? And somehow, even though I do think it's really great that there was women's liberation and everything, it's important to figure out where those roles lie, because there's some wonderful strengths that we can learn and we won't need to honor for men, and yet at the same time, we've got our own strengths too.
Absolutely, and it's about that kind of a balance and that kind of empowerment, so that you still are equal to one another, but for different reasons. You don't have to be completely exactly like that person, you know? And so men can offer that protection and that safety that's important to women, and particularly to young girls, and how they even experience that, and how important that would be for them to experience.
Very much so, especially in today's society, which is almost a fast food society, pun intended.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. In regards to youth and girls, how early do we start seeing signs? You'd mentioned 11 or 12 when you go into the schools, but in general, when you're having clients coming in and you go through the process in terms of figuring out what the triggers are and what got them involved in terms of, I'm not sure about the best way to word this, but basically just where it doesn't, it just may be not the most wholesome and healthiest way to look at ourselves and our body image and taking care of ourselves in the best way.
Mm-hmm.
When does that usually start?
I have seen it start at, 7 years old. And realistically, that's where we need to be going in, but it's a huge topic, it's a controversial topic, it's a frightening topic. We have learned over the years to not go in to a school with information on what anorexia is, what bulimia is, what binge eating disorder is, because to a young mind, that's giving them an idea.
Mm-hmm.
They may not really take that information as it's intended. So we have switched. We go in more about self-esteem. We talk about loving yourself, loving other people, loving your body. And this is an area where parents can really encourage very young children. Their own attitude about their body is essential in what's shaping our future with the youth today. Or, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds that talk about dieting and talk about hating their bodies. They're hearing that not only from the media, but
from their own families.
From their own families, and bless their families. They don't know. They're not doing that purposely.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happening.
It is happening. One of the questions I was going to ask you in regards to that are, what are some of the signs to look for? Like, if you're a parent, or say you're dating someone and you think they might have an eating disorder, or it's your best friend, what are some symptoms that...
It's probably not what most people would think.
Okay.
You know, the weight is a factor. At that stage, a person hasn't been engaging in their eating disorder for a number of years.
Okay.
Before we see someone who is, 65 pounds or 560 pounds, this has been a long-term problem for them.
Okay.
So really encouraging people not to look for just that and then deciding that that is an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I think the early signs can just be how that person is coping, whether they're isolating or not is a huge part of it.
Okay.
Their stress levels. If you see somebody just shutting down on a regular basis, they're just not communicative. They're not connecting with other people.
Mm.
They're not having a sense of intimacy with partners, with themselves, with their community. Like, it's a real disconnect. And that's something that when we do look back into the progression of an eating disorder, we can go right back to when did that begin to happen. And that can be very early, at 11 or 12 years old. And then that young woman, in many cases, would go on to pick up a magazine and begin to look at ways, how can I be accepted? How can I connect? How can I belong in this society?
So sometimes, and it hits in the tweens, puberty kind of stage when the body's changing, and all of a sudden we're not sure whether or not we're a woman, whether we're a child, and all it's like, oh my gosh, my body's changing, I'm changing, I don't know what the heck is going on inside me.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a sense of needing control.
Yes, an answer. Looking for that answer. I'm kind of lost right now. You know, I had all of my parents to depend on, and I knew what my body did, and mm-hmm. it was athletic, and now I'm growing breasts, and now I'm having hormones, and now what has happened to me? And will I look like that woman in the magazine ultimately? Will I achieve what she has, which is perceived as, you know, fame and fortune and wonderful things? And
or am I going to turn into my Aunt Gina, who has, like, you know, a J-cup bra
and a mustache?
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a confusion there early on for young women, and so I think the open communication with the parents is extremely important to guide them at that time, to mm-hmm. answer those questions, to refrain from saying things like, yes, you have your mom's hips, and that's just the way it is, you know?
Yeah.
Too bad for you about your legs, you know? And those kinds of things, we're used to doing that in a very jokey, sarcastic way, but it's extremely unhealthy. Your children, you're just gods to them. And all of a sudden, you're putting down part of your body, which in turn can be interpreted to the very sensitive as putting down part of them. And that's the danger.
I think that's so important in terms of just honoring who someone is. I love the fact you mentioned in your private practice, one of the things you always do is you give them the quote from Nelson Mandela when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was great because it's one of my favorite ones, which I'll let you, if you want to paraphrase it, because I always paraphrase it badly.
Because
I did this afternoon. Unless you want me to.
Well, we can do a joint effort on that.
Okay.
Because I know the beginning. Tis not our darkness, but our light that we fear most. And then it goes on to say that who are we
to be gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Who are we not to be? By letting our own light shine, we inspire others to be the same. Which makes so much sense, especially when people are lost. It's like they need to find that light within themselves so they can guide themselves forward. So, because I've always thought of in terms of counseling, and forgive me if I'm wrong, I've always thought of a really good counselor is someone who's a guide, mm-hmm. who gives you those tools, but it's up to the individual to fix themselves where they need to go through and want it. They need to want it. They need to actually put the work in, because it is work, just like anything else is in life.
Yes, and the consistency mm-hmm. is most important, and understanding the stages of recovery. We are not just going to stop having an eating disorder overnight. We go through many, many stages and layers, and it can be viewed as something, such a beautiful journey. I mean, in my case, in my recovery, I can look back now and say that it was an amazing journey, and I can respect and appreciate it. During the years I was in it, not so much.
No.
It's a hard journey, but I love the way you said that about the light. Shelley's Angels logo is based on a purple heart, which is based on courage, and there's a light in the corner of that heart, and it is, to me, very symbolic of the light within each of us that really can guide ourselves as well. And so when we can't really see that for ourselves, it's really important to have someone with you that can guide you. And then the wings around the heart is really about the recovery and bringing that to the light. And mm-hmm. and I use that term often in my counseling. Let's bring it to the light. You know, let's look at this in your darkest hour, and let's bring it to the light and see what transpires from that. If we look at this from a really different way, a different perspective, what transpires? So it can be really powerful for the individual to begin to create that with inside themselves. Yeah. It's all there. Just needs to come. We're really returning back home.
Yeah.
To what we already knew.
And I think that's really, really key. And absolutely. Recovery for everything.
So. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
In regards to everything in terms of with counseling, what are the steps to recovery?
This is something I'd really like to write more about because it's a very, very good question and something that we need to be more aware of. We know the steps of going into an eating disorder. Most people are aware of that. But the steps of recovery, they're very individual, but they're very common. You know, each person, and I used to think of my clients as this, you know, this beautiful gallery where, you know, it's all artwork, but they're all different. And, you know, so each person needs to be respected for that individual recovery. If you're a parent or a partner and you're wondering what is going on in there, in this counseling, one thing to really look at is that person communicating better? Are they connecting with you a little bit better? Not to focus on the actual eating disorder and what's going on with that. That's not really the problem. That's been the solution for them up to the point they receive treatment. So focusing on that is not the best way, but focusing on, are they coming to you a little bit more? Are they trying to say something to you? Are they really trying? Because they are trying, and they're just devastated. It's so hard to say, I'm hurting, and this is what I need. That takes a lot of time and practice. Mm-hmm. So the conscientiousness, I think, of partners and parents just to be able to say, okay, I'm seeing a little bit of a change, and you know, and I'm liking that. I'm liking to get to know you a little bit more. Mm. That can be very encouraging. Instead of focusing on what did you eat? Are you losing weight? Aren't you gaining? That just takes you away and furthers the distraction and the disillusionment of what this is really about.
That makes perfect sense. We're going to take a really quick short break. And when we get back, let's chat a little bit more in terms of what our partners can do in terms of just learning to recognize triggers. And if you think your partner has an eating disorder, how to address that and having those perhaps not so comfortable conversations. And I think it'll be really exciting. So awesome. We are going to take a short break and you're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
This hour, continental way of eating. We pick up our silverware, index finger in the back of the fork, index finger on top of the knife.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, dining at the Sub is a little less formal.
The Honor Roll Sushi Bar. Get maki rolls, rice bowls, and bento boxes made fresh all day. Don't forget to ask about our party platters. Located in the basement of the Sub, the Honor Roll Sushi Bar is open Monday through Friday. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the Sub's two licensed establishments.
Pit Pub and Burger Bar is home of the famous Pit Night. Relax with great prices on cold beer and lots of big screen HD TVs or chow down on charbroiled burgers, beer battered fish and chips, and Belgian fries. The Pit is open 7 days a week and Wednesday through Saturday is open late until 2 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. And I suppose I should put that part on, although I'm not being super duper sexy tonight, but I will play it anyway because I can.
Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, we did mention the word pornography in the first half of the show, so yes, I suppose it could be something. But then again, that is why my show is after 10 o'clock, or 10 o'clock, as we so like to say around here. And if you are just joining us now, we are chatting tonight with Shelley Jensen, and we are talking about Shelley's Angels, and it's pretty awesome. We're talking, it's Eating Disorder Week is coming up, and it's really important to recognize the things that we can do for the first half of the show. If you're just joining us now, we're chatting about things that we can do to make a difference in terms of our community and the fact that she's got this great fundraiser coming up on Friday and just some of the other really great stuff. And Shelley's Angels itself is really, really cool. This afternoon when we were chatting before the show, I thought it was really, really neat the fact that you'd mentioned that you had experienced eating disorder yourself, and even just now on the break you were mentioning that, and just how did you go from actually experiencing your eating disorder, and that was something that we talked about earlier too, is just that it's always every day you keep going. Mm-hmm. But and getting into a place of empowerment where you've been able to empower other people. How did you go from one to the other? And I know it's been a journey, but
it's I've been recovered for 23 years, so it's been a long time. But in some ways, it feels like yesterday, because I'm surrounded by it, and I can relate to each person that comes through the door and understand the pain that they're in and the questions that they may have. For me, I was in a very bad place and just a lost, really a lost little soul, I think, on some level, and just really crying out for help. I didn't realize that at the time, and there certainly wasn't a lot of help for someone with eating disorders. I did go into counseling after a divorce and just to, you know, get balanced again and understand who I was. And in that process, I found my eating started to change. And I was very interested in that and quite fascinated. I thought, this doesn't make sense to me at all. So if I work on my issues and my stuff and learn about myself and my life, how does that impact my eating and my body size? And so that's when the research really began for me. And the interest in the psychology behind what a person might do to themselves with food as they would with other drugs and alcohol. And I found that there was a huge correlation there. And it really fascinated me and it sparked the interest. So I began, after I was quite into my recovery, I did work in the weight loss field for many years as well, and I watched that really initiate so many people into full-fledged eating disorders, so I felt really passionate about that at the time. And I knew that women needed more time, they needed more compassion, and they needed someone to really talk to that understood what they were talking about, what it felt like to feel fat, and what it felt like to just feel that sort of lost feeling. So that's how it perpetuated for me, and it's just been many, many years of a wonderful, wonderful career as a result. Who knew? I didn't know that was going to happen.
But, you know, it's one of those things, sometimes I think when things happen, there's always a dark gift attached. And if we look at that gift and really examine it, it can actually bring a lot of wealth and benefit to our life. It don't necessarily mean monetary, but it's just that lovely richness that comes from that.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think you found that.
And I did.
And I love the fact that you've started the charity as well, because of the fact, which I should let you tell your story, in terms of that, the first client that triggered, like when you did your first fashion show.
Yes, and I just realized that there were so many people who really wanted help. And even though I have been always in private therapy, I thought there was a lot of help out there. You know, and I realize now there's very little help, and that is devastating. It's devastating. So I would find a client would have to, not only are they going through the emotional aspect of recovering from their eating disorder and the physical aspect of it, now they have a financial burden as well. And private counseling can be from anywhere from $75 a session to $150 or even more. And how can someone afford that? And how can a young woman afford that? Treatment is not available as much as we think in Canada. So with the very first client that approached me, she was on a wonderful journey and she was really doing well. And she came in and said, I can't continue with my recovery. And at that moment, I knew she was such a candidate for relapse, which you have to go through in the process, but you really need someone to be with you through that process. And she said, I love doing this work, and I can't do it. I just can't do it. And so I knew, you know, like it's like you have to turn her away, and she's... So we started to... I started to think about ways that we could raise money and for individuals who really wanted to do the work, but were not able. And that really was their only... problem as far as continuing on with the work. They just could not afford it. So I did my best to help them with fees and so on and so on. So we started a fashion show many years ago, and I thought it would be a neat idea to sort of come out and let their friends and family see that they were actually coming out and saying, look, I have this problem. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with me. This is just how I've been coping. and a way to celebrate the families and partners that supported that person in the recovery. So we made a, you know, a beautiful atmosphere, a luncheon or a dinner, and we would have the girls come out. All of the community supported what we were doing by donating clothes and makeup and hair and the whole nine yards. And it was really similar to what you do, Caroline, you know, a beauty night.
Thank you.
And just really letting them experience that joy from inside, that they were beautiful. There was, it had nothing to do with their physical appearance. They were so, so beautiful. So we began to do that on a very private level, just within my own counseling. And I would match what we would earn and donate that towards the person's recovery. And they did stay with me because they were working with me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with Shelley's Angels, as a nonprofit, a person can apply for counseling anywhere or a treatment center anywhere, and we will help support them financially to have that treatment happen. And that's what's really changed.
I think that's fantastic. And I love the fact, because that's, you're mentioning it's a not-for-profit in BC, and I think that's great. Are you planning to go across the country, or having where there might be a model where other organizations, if they're interested, where you might be able to have them so you can reach more women?
Absolutely.
And men, I should say.
Absolutely. And because we have the bursaries online, the mm-hmm. application online, which is to simply tell your story. What's happened? Where are you now? What have you gone through? And why do you need this help? It's a terrible decision to make. you know, depending on our funding, we'd love to supply money to everyone. But we have received letters from all over the world. Devastating, unbelievable stories of people who, you know, they're dying because they can't afford the treatment. They want to go to treatment. They don't know what to do, you know? So they're really, really stuck, and it's some of them are just so heartbreaking. But because we have that access, and we will supply bursary if you need to go into the States for treatment, which is more likely, because they have more access, then we will help you with the plane fare. We'll help you with some of the treatment. If you're seeing a counselor now and you might have to give that up, we'll help you mm-hmm. to continue on your journey if you find that value and this is a place that you really want to be. So we encourage people to apply, and we just want more and more energy into that, and you know, people who can to donate and help us raise that money. It seems like a huge work ahead of us, you know, but it's well worth it just to see a person go through treatment, get the help. Most people recover. They really do, you know, but we're really faced with the percentage of people who do not recover because they haven't gone into treatment.
But that's because they can't get in.
Yeah.
A lot of times, sir, as you said, there's financial barriers. And one of the things you brought up this afternoon, actually, was something interesting where you'd mentioned in terms of sometimes there's a social stigma as well, where it's almost seen as a narcissistic disease, mm-hmm. where it's not where people don't understand the severity of it until it gets to where somebody's 65 pounds. And even then.
Exactly. And the brain function isn't going to be there.
No.
You know, either, right? And that's something to be considered. It's not one day you decided to have an eating disorder. There was so many ways that it propelled, and it's so complex. And it really, it has been your best friend. It's been, you know, it's sort of like if you were going down a raging river and you were completely out of control and you saw a log. And you hung on to that log. It just happened to be your eating disorder. But you hung on to that log. It saved you at that time. So now the process is, how do I let go of this log? There's everybody on the shore saying, come on over. It's okay, you can come. But you don't want to, right? You're going to maybe, and eventually you'll let go of the log and swim around the log and latch back onto it again. And that's what takes the time. You know, it's an extensive amount of time for some people. And it's not all bad news. We have fun in recovery. You know, we have great times, good laughs. It's a very positive experience for most people, where they might be having no help. that's about as negative as it gets.
Okay. You'd mentioned that there's been an increase in the guys in terms of how many men, and I found it interesting. If I could get you to touch on just why do you think there's more men now? Are they more comfortable talking about it, or were there always that many, or has things changed?
That's a good question, and I think both. Men have been more comfortable coming out. There have been, although very few, some books written about men, particularly athletes who have engaged in eating disorders, and all sorts of, young men, old men, really have had the same experience. But there's a little more shame, I think, for men right now where we are. Certainly would encourage men to come forward. It's an experience that they, really would serve them to, as it would be for anyone who's struggling, to find out a little bit more about yourself. What I find interesting is that it's exactly the same as a woman. And I don't even know what I expected when I saw my first male client, but it's exactly the same.
So men and women aren't that different after all, is what I'm hearing. Even though we have different roles, we're not that different. We're still human.
The humanness is there. And although they may be looking at their body image in a slightly different way about, and back to pornography, we want to say, that they're looking at, again, a false image, right? And so they're looking at what we call megarexia, which is the desire to bodybuild to extreme. Mm-hmm. Not that it's healthy, but it looks like it's appealing. There's some appeal to that, as it is to women when we see sort of a conformed body image that can be appealing to us, but the illusion that it creates, it's the same for men, and the illusion that it creates for them about success and women and all these things, and that's where the trouble lies, is that there's no reality in that. So they do go to extremes of extreme dieting, extreme working out, and extreme body dysmorphia, and they will change their bodies. I've heard stories where they will pump their muscles with different injections and so on, and it really leaves them distorted. But it's based from the same thing. I don't want to be in the body that I'm in or the life that I'm in right now. So I need to change, and I need to do something so drastic to get out of here.
Wow.
So for men, it's the same as women. So
have you had any clients that are transgender, either male to female or female to male?
No, I haven't. But I've certainly had, gay clients, many, many gay clients, right? That are, and they have their own set of things that they might be working through, but all, again, back to the humanness, that's really...
We're all human beings.
Yeah, it's really the same, and their souls and their hearts are the same, and that's, where we want to go, what we want to appeal to and help, help a person realize who they are, what they're capable of doing.
If Shelley's Angels had all the money in the world and you could help everyone, what would you like to see in the future? I know you're going to Florida very soon, and you're going to be chatting about that, and to Disneyland?
Yes, it's in Orlando, Florida, and Disney World, and it's International Association for Eating Disorder Professionals. And we're going to be doing an international forum and talking with people from every country about what's going on in your country as far as eating disorders. Do you see an increase, a decrease? What's the body image like? For example, Argentina has the highest rate of body dysmorphia, so to speak, as far as the pressure for women for plastic surgery, high education, and body image. It's outstanding in Argentina.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
I would have never thought that. I just think of the tango when I think of there, which makes me very naive.
Yeah. And we think they all look like that. So, it's kind of interesting to open that up and see. And so I'll be representing Canada and what's happening from my experience in Canada as far as eating disorders and looking at some innovative solutions.
Such as?
One thing that I think would be a wonderful idea would be for us to have some help as therapists. So, for example, coming into schools is one thing, but many counselors that are in the school system have their master's degree in clinical counseling, and they could really help by looking at what to look for and educating the girls and having a safe place for the girls to go rather than having to go through the whole line of treatment and maybe not even getting in. In Canada, I find that a lot of times the criteria is so strong for receiving treatment that you're not sick enough for treatment. That's the title of my talk that I'll be doing in Florida, is not sick enough for treatment. And that's what saddens me so much about where we're at. I don't know why we're here, but I know we need help. And so I think that's one solution, supporting therapists, supporting other people, supporting parents that are going through this, supporting partners, so that we're really doing this as a collaborative, and people are coming together and really learning about it and appreciating it, and not looked down upon the stigma or what we think it might be about. Let's find out what it is about and get educated.
And what do you think it is about?
It's a coping mechanism. And, you know, it's really about anxiety. It's about depression. It's about, you know, just so many other things. It feeds on itself. It becomes worse and worse as a person is engaging in that behavior. But when it started, it's really a coping mechanism. It's been the solution. And it's worked, you know. That's the other thing too, is it's hard to give up because it's worked.
And you'd mentioned that earlier, we were chatted about, in terms of, I believe we'd said the percentage was probably about 45-48% in terms of people who had eating disorders, where there was a correlation with sexual violence, sexual abuse in their past, whether that be date rape, whether that be from childhood. And it's interesting where you'd given the example of somebody gaining weight, basically, where it was almost like, stay clear, stay away from me. And it's almost like this barrier, so people can't get near them on a physical level.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that takes a while to really realize that and to offer forgiveness to yourself for that. And most people, they know that right away. They know that they're doing that. They don't really want to do that, but they know they are. And, you know, it's a way to deform yourself so that you're not unsafe. And whatever that experience has been for that person, if they haven't felt safe around men or around women, there's that distortion that happens. So it's again an illusion. So if I'm not attractive, then I won't be harmed. And we know that's not true.
No, because we can be harmed at any time. Not that that's a really wonderful thought.
Yeah, exactly. So it's creating that safety, and that's why it works initially. So there is a lot of people who have had sexual assault or incest survivor or childhood sexual abuse. Not everyone by any means. But there may have been a tiny experience in there for them that has led them to believe something about their safety and their sexuality.
That's one of the reasons I think we're going back to your fundraiser that you have on Friday, that Beauty in Bras is quite nice, where it's taking something that could be exploitive in some way, shape, or form. As you and I were chatting about, it takes guts to wear lingerie in front of a lot of people that aren't your significant others. So.
Oh, yes. And, you know, it's really sort of risque what we're doing in a way, but it's very powerful.
Yes.
Because you can really enjoy your sexuality and your femininity, and there's so much effort and time put into, again, the body distortion that I don't want to be female because that's an unsafe place for me, or male. This way we're really celebrating, you know, the funness of it. And it's burlesque, and it's, you know, great music and dancing, and these girls are all different shapes and sizes. And they really represent the normal woman, the average, what women really are.
Yeah.
you know, and so I'm extremely excited about that, and so grateful that we're able to do this in a really healthy way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fantastic, and I love the fact that, am I able to say this in regards to the fact that you've got one of your previous participants who is in recovery, who's going to be one of the models in the show. I think that's fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so proud of her too. And, you know, and we're very aware, you know, of what the triggers could be, and, you know, just to let everyone know, you know, it's okay. They're okay. It's not going to put anybody in an awkward situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really to celebrate that freedom within your body, and the freedom that she's found even within her body as well.
And in regards to that, where can people find out more information in terms of where to get tickets? Can they get them on your website, or do you have to get them at the door? How can they find out?
They can find out through Club Zone.
Okay.
And order them online.
Nice.
And we're also having them available at the door. The Caprice is a huge venue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're okay, you know, as far as getting them at the door. The board members of Shelley's Angels, we've all been selling tickets separately, and Shay as well, to the people that, you know, really support her and her beautiful work. So it's really, it's been a wonderful effort, but there's, you can get the tickets on Club Zone. It's $20. It's a great night.
And it's going to a great cause, which is so important too, just to make a difference. So you can have a good time and make a difference in the lives of many.
Absolutely. And both guys and gals will be there.
So for those of you who are single, you might want to go check it out, because you can walk, you can do your strut, and practice all your eye gazing, dropping your chin down, looking up through your eyelashes and smiling and looking at someone across the room, because you never know, you might meet someone who's super amazing. Yeah, fundraisers are a really good place to meet people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
And for you personally, if we've got a listener out there who may have a partner or a family member, or maybe themselves that may recognize when they're listening to the show and say, hey, that's me, or that's my girlfriend, that's my wife, that's, you know, that's my husband, you know, where can they get a hold of you? And what would you say the steps are for when they call the first time in terms of your private practice?
I offer a consultation at no charge, and I find that very important. Connecting to someone to guide you through this journey is so important. And if you don't connect with the first person you meet, that's okay. You move on and you find somebody that you really feel like you can talk to.
Okay.
So I offer that just as a way for them to come in, check it out, see how they feel, if they're comfortable.
And if they're ready to start.
And they're ready to start. My office looks like a little girl's bedroom. It's all full of fairies and things like that. So, and I used to hide that, and now I just have it right out there, and, you know, and say, this is me, and, you know, have a seat, and let's talk, and let's be comfortable. So looking for a therapist is extremely important, you know, when you're going on this adventure, and it can be so intimidating and frightening, because you're just about to come and tell somebody your whole story that you've never mm-hmm. met before. And will they understand you? And, you know, so a lot of things need to be in line for that. So for me, it's a phone call, it's an email, and it's all confidential. It's only me there, and I do get back to you, and we set up something, and then we meet, and then we take it from there.
And what would you recommend in terms of for someone looking for a therapist? What are some key things? Just obviously the connection, as you mentioned, but what other things are really key in terms of really, and that's to make the most of that session? What are some things that they should be asking themselves before going in, perhaps, so they can make the best use of both your time as well as theirs?
Absolutely. I think one thing is location. It's very important. Is it going to be convenient for you to come in? The frequency of the visits. How often would you like to come in, and compare to what your therapist might recommend? The price is extremely important as well, you know, because it's a cost. And the length of therapy, no one can really give you an idea of how long it's going to take. So are you really committed to looking at that long term and mm-hmm. squirming through parts of it?
Can you're you? Starting to make me scared. I don't know if that makes me, excites me or freaks me out.
And then, of course, there's fun. And I think it should be fun and exciting and progressive and just a beautiful, beautiful journey. You know, so it's important to check that person out and see if you feel comfortable. That's okay. That's the biggest thing, I think.
I think that's huge. And then last but not least, I heard a rumor you might be writing a book. Fact or fiction?
That's fact.
Do tell.
I've been working on this book in my heart for 20 years, and it's finally piecing together. And I'm going to call it Hunger in the Belly.
That's very appropriate in many ways.
And really address and really finally really talk about what it is that we yearn for and ache for in our lives and in our world, and how can we get that. So it will be my story, how I got to where I am and how I reached that freedom, combined with other stories as a therapist, flashes of me in therapy. It's a little like a novel, and it's a little, you know, it's kind of neat. The writing process has just taken off for me, and I'm super excited about that.
That sounds fantastic. Well, I definitely want to have you on again, obviously, for many reasons. So, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on Friday night with that, because I think that's going to be really fun.
Awesome. Can't wait.
And just for our listeners out there, what is your website, just so they can know how to get a hold of you, both for Shelley's Angels as well as your own personal?
Shelley's Angels is www.shelleysangels.com.
May contain adult content.
Sorry about that. I got overzealous and decided to play my own voice again. If I can get you to say that one more time.
So it's www.shelleysangels.org. And the other website is Shelley Jensen Esteem. My counseling is Esteem Counseling Services, which is a capital S and the letter team. But it's also, if you say it really fast, it's Esteem.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. And that's Shelley Jensen Esteem. They're both of the websites are linked together. And also, just wanted to make sure that people took a look at Shay's website as well.
And Shay's the designer, is she not? And yes. He's putting the whole show together, which is pretty fantastic.
Amazing. Handmade, hand-dyed, beautifully designed, soft, feminine lingerie.
So in other words, all of you out there who are looking for something a little sexy to wear for your sweetheart for Valentine's Day, or to dress your sweetheart in, that could be really super hot.
Absolutely. You get first-hand viewing of some of the things she does.
Yeah, that could be super hot. So, and it should be a good guys, girls night out either way, whether or not you're going out with your girlfriends and having a drink beforehand. Are you going to be doing a wardrobe fitting where people can actually try on the bras or anything like that? Maybe not the ones that are being modeled, but...
The ones that are being modeled, there will be, I believe, about 30 different outfits and 8 models, and they will come off the stage, and those are for sale right there.
Wow.
And a great way to connect to get some custom-made design as well. Shay will be there to talk to everyone, and for the last set, we're going to have Shelley's Angels tank tops with logos and wings on the back. And those will also be for sale as well.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Shelley, and I'm excited, so I can't wait. So listeners out there, I hope you are going to be checking this out on Friday night. That's going to be at the Caprice. That is Beauties and Bras, and they do have a Facebook event listing, so you can go and look it up on Facebook if not, and maybe if you Twitter, perhaps we might actually put you on a guest list. You never know. So if you are going to Twitter, @SexyInVanCity. And up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. Hans is a very, very, very sexy man to be miserable with. Let him guide you through the wee hours of the morning with his... Ooh, he's touching my shoulder. And I don't know, I haven't looked around yet. Shelley, have you looked at his shoes? I have shoegasms every time. I'm going to hold my breath. Nice deep inhale.
Nah.
He's groaning and going, they're not my favorite pair. But they're an oldie, but a goodie. He's got good shoes.